Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. If your friend said that you're the next Beethoven before you've written the first note of your first symphony, well, you might have a little insight into the pressure Johannes Brahms felt while writing his first symphony, a work that Brahms labored over for nearly 15 years. But the results were what his friends expected and much more. The Tulsa Symphony will perform Brahms' masterwork, the Symphony No. 1, along with the popular Grieg Peer Gynt Suite No. 1 and Carlos Chavez's influential Sinfonia India tomorrow evening. My guest on Studio Tulsa will be the guest conductor leading the orchestra, Yaniv Dinur. The Israeli-born conductor is a resident conductor of the Milwaukee Symphony, leading that orchestra in about 50 concerts a year. He also leads the New Bedford Symphony in Massachusetts, one of the best small orchestras in the country. Dinev was the 2019 recipient of the Sir George Schulte Fellow Award, and this year will mark subscription debuts in Edmonton, Canada, San Diego, Sarasota, Fort Worth, and here in Tulsa. He's an accomplished pianist who will occasionally solo while conducting, and he plays chamber music as well. He'll lead the Tulsa Symphony tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall, and he's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Yaniv Dinur, welcome to Studio Tulsa.
Thank you for having me.
This program features two works that are incredibly familiar to audiences. One is very important in the history of music and certainly in the development of music of the Americas, and should be very familiar to listeners. What is your reaction to this program when the program committee came to you and asked you to conduct?
I loved it immediately when I saw this. When my manager sent me this program, I wrote to her, "Wow, this is a great program," with a few exclamation marks. First of all, Brahms' first symphony, one of my favorite symphonies in the repertoire. And of course, Peer Gynt by Grieg, that is very familiar. You can hear it in every commercial, every ad, you know. And in general, I like that it's Suite No. 1 and Symphony No. 1. There's always something nice that it's the same number. Doesn't have to be, of course. And in the middle, something that is so different than both, the Sinfonia India by Carlos Chavez. Big contrast. So for me, it's a perfect program. Yeah. And there's no soloist. I don't need to deal with anyone.
Now, you're a soloist yourself oftentimes. Right. I mean, do you still perform with other orchestras and as with a different conductor? Or mainly when you perform, are you playing piano and conducting at the same time?
It depends on the concerto.
You did a Brahms recently.
I did a Brahms, but I'm not that crazy to do it, to conduct and play at the same time. No, I did it with another conductor. But I also, I played Mozart concerto and Rhapsody in Blue, and those I did from the keyboard. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Before we talk a little bit about yourself, let's talk about the Brahms Symphony No. 1. Much is always made about these years of work that Brahms did in preparing the symphony and all the expectations that his friends put upon him, which is, you know, hey, this symphony, it's going to be like Beethoven, right? I mean, can you imagine the pressure he was under? And he produces a work that arguably absolutely follows in that tradition.
Right. And I think he knew his role in music history, and he knew that he's a link, a prominent link in the dynasty of great composers. And he had the big shadow of Beethoven. And actually, in the first movement of the Brahms Symphony, you hear a lot of the Fifth Symphony of Beethoven, the ta-ta-ta-tam, pa-pa-pa-pam, all the time. And then in the last movement is, of course, something that is very similar to the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven. But he was annoyed when people mentioned that to him, of course. But even without that, it's just it's a great symphony. It's a monumental piece. And when I think about the four Brahms symphonies, it's really hard. It's every time that I conduct each one of them, I feel that this is my favorite Brahms symphony. I can't say the same about the Beethoven symphonies. It's easier to choose a favorite from there, or the Mozart symphonies, of course. But with Brahms, it's really all four of them are just all four of them are my favorite.
I was struck by something I read about Brahms when somebody pointed out that one of the melodies, I think it's in the third movement or maybe second movement, says this is very much a Beethovenian melody. And he goes, any idiot can see.
Exactly. Yeah. He was annoyed by these comments.
But I think of the Brahms Symphony No. 1, you think of all this pressure that was put on him. There are moments where it's like, could this be Beethoven resurrected, although it's very much Brahmsian? But there's almost like this melding at particular points in the symphony that by the time he gets to this 2, 3, and 4, it's utterly Brahmsian. Do you feel that as well?
Yes, I do feel that there is some kind of evolution in the symphonies. And it's interesting to think that in the first three symphonies, he first wrote them for two pianos, and then he orchestrated them. But the fourth one, he was confident enough and he wrote it directly for the orchestra, and then for the tradition, he arranged it for two pianos. So there is an evolution, there's a progression. Yeah, the first symphony, there's also a lot of, you can find so many connections between the themes, that this is the same theme as before, just inverted and things like that, like as if he was he wanted to prove something, that he can do these things. Mm-hmm. And in the other symphonies, you don't feel it as much, but maybe we are looking too hard, you know. It's I don't know if I would have felt that way if I didn't know how much pressure he had and all that.
Yeah. Well, how do you approach looking at a piece like this? Obviously, this is something you've conducted a number of times. You've studied it. But when you get ready to perform it again, what are some of the things you go and look at the score and try to discern or rediscern?
I always find new things in a piece of music, things that I didn't notice before, things that I did a certain way, but I always question myself, like, why did I do it like that last time? I mean, does it really make sense, or did I hear it somewhere that somebody else did? And so there are things that in the current performance that I'm going to conduct are more clean, that, okay, I know everybody is doing this ritenuto there, they're slowing down, but I'm not going to do that. He didn't write it, so why do that, you know? I did it last time, but I'm not going to do that
so
this time.
Challenging performance practices that are sort of what Broadway producers used to say, eliminating the improvements made afterwards.
Right. Or as Toscanini said about tradition, tradition is the last bad performance. So it's very true. You know, there are some traditions that formed over the years, and we're not sure why, we're not sure who started them, but everybody is doing it like that. And then you question that, and it's good to question that. Maybe some of it has logic, and maybe some of it doesn't. But with Brahms, in general, there's... I first studied the symphony when I was 16 or 17. And there's something about the initial reaction that I felt about this piece that hasn't changed. This shock that I had when I first heard these timpani strikes in the beginning of the symphony, and the massive sound and all of that I hear kind of in my head. And that I think will stay with me every time I will conduct this symphony.
That is one of the great things about this symphony. There's no warm-up.
That's right. It just hits you in the face.
Well, why don't we hear a little music from the Brahms Symphony No. 1, and actually I want to cue up the beginning of the allegro of the first movement, which gives us that sense of that connection to Beethoven. If you listen back in the background, you can hear the strings once the woodwinds take over the melody, that da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da,
exactly.
The timpani. Yeah. Here's music by Brahms, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening with my guest today, Yaniv Dinur.
Thank you.
Music by Brahms, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening with my guest, guest conductor Yaniv Dinur, who is the resident conductor of the Milwaukee Symphony and Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra and music director of the New Bedford Symphony in Massachusetts. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about you because, as I mentioned earlier, you still perform as a pianist. I assume that was your first instrument.
Yep.
When did conducting come in the picture for you?
In my teens, when I was 16, I went to a musical high school where we studied all the, you know, math and literature and all that, plus music subjects. And there was a conducting teacher in the high school. And I just started taking lessons for fun, and I loved it. And it opened a whole new world for me of music, and also music that, as a pianist, I couldn't be part of. Because until the 20th century, there's no piano in the orchestra. So as a conductor, I could be part of it, and that was awesome for me.
Do you remember the first time you stood in front of an orchestra and dropped the baton and music came out?
Yes, it was in front. It was in Israel, in front of the Haifa Symphony, and I conducted an overture by Beethoven, Egmont.
Egmont, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a shock. It was a shock. I felt the orchestra. It's like the whole orchestra was sitting on my shoulders, you know, and it's such a heavy weight. And I couldn't move them. And so many people are looking at me at the same time, you know. And it's something that you never forget.
Did that quickly become the focus of your attention? Or were you thinking about, hey, I want to do piano as a career? Which I have to admit, you still play chamber music. You still perform as a soloist with orchestras from time to time.
Yeah, the thing about conducting that I love so much, because I love the music and I love working with people, and I have the best seat in the house. But something is missing. What's missing is the physical connection with the sound. I don't make the sound at the end of the day. It's the players, it's the musicians. But when I play piano, I have that connection. So they really complete each other.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other very familiar piece on this program, which is a Peer Gynt Suite No. 1 by Edvard Grieg. You know, at least three of the four movements are incredibly familiar, a couple of them to the point of being cliche. I mean, if you want to use a cheap way of having music that depicts the first, you know, the sunrise, you go to morning mood. If you want to portray suspense and excitement in the Hall of the Mountain King, these are very, very familiar works. How do you make them so they're fresh and new?
That's a good question. That's something, what I do, I try to look at them like I look at any other piece of music, to really focus on what the composer wrote, about the details, and to try to understand what they mean and what they mean to me. Yes, that's how.
But in the Hall of Mountain Kings, fun to play. Anitra's Dance has this lovely lilt to it. I would like to play music from the second movement, which is Asa's Death, which again is not that familiar, but it's just this incredibly beautiful melody.
Very powerful.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and hear that. That's music by Grieg. It will be performed by my guest today, Yaniv Dinur, with the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening.
Thank you.
was music by Edvard Grieg from the Peer Gynt Suite No. 1, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. And my guest today is the resident conductor of the Milwaukee Symphony, music director of the New Bedford Symphony in Massachusetts, Yaniv Dunur, who will be leading the concert. One thing I noticed, you're resident conductor of Milwaukee. You're going to be doing a subscription concert, I think, in May. And I noticed that you appeared on the radio broadcast that we air on our sister station, Classical 88.7, this fall on the Milwaukee series. So obviously, I always think of resident conductors as doing the runouts, the outreach concerts, those sorts of things. But it sounds like you're a pretty important part of the conducting team at Milwaukee. And you're doing a concert with Joyce Yang in May.
Yeah, that's, I think, the special thing about Milwaukee that is different from other orchestra in respect to this position is that you, the resident conductor, I started as the assistant conductor, you really get a lot to do. You don't just sit in the hall and cover all the concerts and pray for your opportunity to... that somebody will get sick or something.
Which
like
you
that.
Have done with Ado DeVart, I believe, one time.
Yeah, so that happened actually in my first year there. I got a call that Ado was sick and I have to conduct the concert. It was a concert with Yitzhak Perlman. And actually, I didn't get the call at first because I was asleep. So they came to my house. And they knocked on the door, and I opened with my, I completely disoriented, and you're conducting the concert tonight. What? So it was really an amazing experience. But I think also because that happened, they saw that they could count on me of doing a good job. And in Milwaukee, I conduct about 50 concerts per year. There were 2 years that they didn't have a music director, and during those 2 years, I did 70 concerts per year. So I really got an amazing, it was an amazing experience to be in that position with that orchestra. And I got to meet a lot of artists, a lot of guest artists, and I invited them to New Bedford.
I noticed that was the one thing I noticed about New Bedford is you're drawing like top level A talent as far as soloists to perform with your orchestra there.
My vision for the New Bedford Symphony was to make it a kind of a boutique orchestra where the top soloists in the world could come there and try things before they go to the bigger orchestras. And it kind of happened. We created a name to ourselves that it's a good ensemble where people could come and that's exactly what Yefim Bronfman did, for example. Right before he went to the New York Philharmonic to play Beethoven's Second Piano Concerto, he came to us a week before and he played it with us. And we'll take you. Had to think about it, but sure, you can come.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. So it would be for an artist that maybe wants, when they're picking a piece of repertoire they haven't played in a long time or maybe never performed with an orchestra, you're sort of like their beta, if you will.
Yeah, sure. And we're happy to be.
No, obviously.
Yeah. And our audience, of course, is delighted to have this experience. And our orchestra and me. I mean, Pinka Zuckerman came and Joyce Yang and Karen Gomio. Vadim Gluzman is going to come in a couple of months. And we've been having a great time there.
Yeah, and I assume like the New Bedford Symphony, you're drawing musicians from throughout New England, from Boston.
Mostly the Boston area.
Yeah. I would assume. And there's tons of really amazing musicians.
Really good musicians. And some of our players actually sub sometimes with the Boston Symphony. So you can imagine that they're very high-level musicians.
Yeah. We've talked about the two very familiar pieces. The final and connecting piece between these two war horses, if you will, is the Carlos Chavez Sinfonia India. And this is an incredibly important piece, in development of music in the Americas. It uses indigenous themes from Mexican tribal groups. It's really created this fantasia, I think, of music. Tell me a little about your approach to this particular piece.
Yes, what's interesting is that he used actual themes, not trying to imitate or something like that, like other composers did, but actual themes. And the percussion section that he uses is also very interesting. And he chose actual percussion that he knew that most orchestras won't have. So he tried to match these traditional percussion instruments with Western percussion instruments. And that's, for me, that has been the main challenge, a challenge I'm hoping to overcome with the Tulsa Symphony, to how to make the Western percussion instruments sound like the native Mexican percussion instruments.
I know there's one percussion instrument that's supposed to be made from deer hooves. I'm guessing there might not be one for the Tulsa Symphony.
Yeah, we are going to rehearse it tonight for the first time. But I'm pretty sure probably not. And also another percussion instrument that is made out of butterfly cocoons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of the mornings I can go out with a net to catch some butterflies or... Yeah, so we have to solve that to make it as close as possible, because if you just play the Western percussion instruments as they are usually played, you won't get the right sound. So I did some research, tried to listen to how these percussion instruments, special instruments, sound. There's a drum that you put in water and you hit it. So how do you make it sound and makes a special sound, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about and I asked for help with a colleague from the Milwaukee Symphony, and we experimented a little bit in the percussion room of the orchestra. It's like being in a toy store, you know? Different mallets and different instruments.
So it sounds like you found some solutions.
Yes. But it depends on what we have here, and I'm planning to do a little experiment with the percussion players in the Tulsa Symphony, and for 20 minutes before the orchestra joins, just to play on all the toys that they have and see what we can do.
Yeah, and this is the other thing that's really interesting about this piece is, you know, you're taking indigenous melodies and adapting them to Western music, you know, the Western, the way, the nomenclature and the way you would notate it. So that makes a kind of a challenge, because you're shifting meters all over the place.
Oh my God, that is, it is a really difficult piece. It is a short piece, about 12 minutes long, and very difficult, with all the meter changes, and there's no pattern. You know, it's not like you have two bars of 5/8, two bars of 7. It's changing all the time, and there's no pattern. So you really have to concentrate and count. And
I'm guessing those changes are simply based on the melodic material that's coming out.
Right, right. And he had to find a way to jot them down, and that's how he did it. No other choice. But it's beautiful. It's so exciting and gorgeous and interesting with all the different percussion, and for the audience, I'm sure it will be a lot of fun. For us, I don't know. We'll be sweating and stressed and anxious, but we'll make the best out of it.
Yeah, you know, and when you hear it, all of a sudden, El Salón México sort of starts to come into focus as you're listening to Chavez and some of the other composers that sort of tried to capture that. But this is the real deal, I think.
That's right, the well, original.
Well, let's hear the opening of Chavez's Sinfonía India, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra Saturday evening. Thank you. That's music by Carlos Chavez, which will be performed by the Tulsa Symphony with my guest conductor, Yaniv Dinur. And I know you've got a pretty busy schedule. I think you might be making a debut with San Diego later this spring.
It will be actually my fourth time with them.
Okay.
But my first time conducting a subscription concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the things you're looking forward to in the coming months? I know you're going to do Mahler 9 with your New Bedford Symphony.
Yes, Mahler 9 is a mountain, big mountain to climb. And I'm going to do also William Walton's First Symphony, which is a great masterpiece of the 20th century.
Hardly heard in America.
Hardly heard. I also didn't know the piece about until a few years ago when I heard it live, and I was shocked. How did I not know this? And it's just an incredible piece of music. I'm looking forward to my concert in Milwaukee, where I'm going to conduct Concerto for Orchestra by Lutoslavsky. Just a lot of music, but for now I'm focusing on my week here in Tulsa with this amazing program, and we just had our first rehearsal last night, and it's been a joy to work with these musicians.
Yaniv Dinur, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yaniv Dinur is the resident conductor of the Milwaukee Symphony and the music director of the New Bedford Symphony in Massachusetts. He'll be guest conducting the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra in their concert tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Chapman Music Hall of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, performing Johannes Brahms Symphony No. 1 along with works by Grieg and Carlos Chavez. For information on the concert, visit tulsasymphony.org. We're going to leave you with more music from Brahms Symphony. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.